Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. Welcome to the June 2019 Clutter Conversation webcast. I'm your moderator, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. Our topic today is milestones and mishaps, organizing around major life events. Before we get started, a few notes for anyone who's joining us for the first time. Gail will present ideas about the topic, and then she'll answer your questions. If you think of a question as we go along, please feel free to share it via chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail answers it before we get away to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature to let me know if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. Over to you, Gail.
Hi, everybody. So good to see you. This topic originally came about because I got hurt last month, and it reminded me in a very pointed way how life's sudden events, whether they're planned or unplanned, really impact how we manage our stuff. And we're going to talk about a few of those life events that happen and how you can prepare for them, plan for them, work with them, and hopefully not be completely taken by surprise when it happens. Let's begin with unexpected events, and accidents are at the top of that list. Nobody wakes up in the morning with a big long to-do list, and at 2:30 you have this item that says, trip and fall in the driveway, fracture your fingers. It's not something that you plan for, right? And so my injury changed my calendar completely that day, and I couldn't go to my afternoon client. I couldn't cook my own dinner that night. I couldn't go to clients for the rest of the week. I really had to sit out for a whole week after I got hurt. And so it changed all of my plans and all of my circumstances for some time to come. And, you know, I'm still recovering, but I'm back to more normal schedule. But for a couple of weeks, I really had to do a whole bunch of alternative coping mechanisms to deal. Unexpected events, whether they're big or small, change the game plan for that moment and forward from that place. And so it requires you to pivot and throw out whatever the old plan was and make a new one based on the trigger. It doesn't matter if you want to change anything or if you really like change or are comfortable with change. It's not really giving you a choice to do that. And so it's going to be hard on you if you're somebody that doesn't, you don't like surprises and you don't like change. These events will be hard. And so one way to cope is to think about them in advance and make some plans now. You're just making potential plans, possible plans, coping mechanisms. You're thinking about things that you could do if the situation ever came up. And that way you can be a little forearmed when life throws you a curveball. So let's talk about whether you, if you have an accident or if you suddenly have a serious illness. Coping with redesigning your day is really hard when you are in pain or you're stuck on the side of the road or you're in the ER, for instance. My first piece of advice is to bail on all of the plans that you have. Your instinct is going to be to try to keep rolling, like, oh, no, it's all good. I'm fine. I can go do all. No, you can't. And my first thought was to tell my afternoon client, oh, I just need to go to the urgent care and let them look at my hand, and then I'll be over later. No, you're not. No, you're not. So just be honest with yourself. It's time to cancel all your plans for the rest of the day and maybe for the rest of the week, depending on what's going on, how bad it is. And you should cancel out farther than you think that you're going to need to, because it's better to cancel out and be able to come back early and say, oh, it, you know, I'm better faster than I thought, than it is to have to cancel it and then cancel it 3 days later again because you didn't give yourself enough time to recover. So advice number one, cancel all the plans quickly. And you're doing yourself a courtesy because you're giving yourself time to rest, but you're also doing your appointment, whoever you're meeting with, whatever you have going on, you're doing them the courtesy of telling them that you're changing their plans as well. Like, my injury changed my client's plans that day because she was expecting to work with me and then I couldn't come over. So you're doing the person that you're going to meet with the courtesy of giving them time to plan their day and make adjustments to this change, just like you're having to do it for yourself. And so better to jump on top of that and get out of everything immediately so that people have time to, they're going to, you know, okay, well, now I have this big hole and I can't do what I was going to do. And so how am I going to rearrange my day? And they're going to want to do the same thing you're trying to do. That is affected by, if you think about when you get the flu, for instance, you sort of slide off the cliff for a while, and then eventually you're sick and you're at home in bed for a long period of time. And you always think that, oh, I'm sitting around doing nothing, I should be able to do stuff. And the truth is, you can't really do stuff while something's wrong, while you're ill, while you're hurt. You spend all of your emotional, mental, physical energy trying to recuperate. And so acknowledging that you, against your will and without consulting you, your body is taking all of your energy to fix yourself. And so you're not going to be able to get a whole bunch of stuff done while you're at home recuperating. So you just have to acknowledge, I need to recuperate. I need to take this time to recuperate. And if I don't, I'm just dragging it out longer and not being able to get back to it as soon as possible. So give yourself the slice of time to do nothing, and everything can wait until you're back. And in the meantime, you're going to get better, faster, and easier if you're at home doing nothing like you're supposed to be. And, you know, didn't like sitting around for a whole week doing nothing, but my hand really hurt, and there was no getting around that. Like, there was no, gee, I'll just take extra leave and go to work. No, it was not happening. So it's really something that you have to acknowledge, as reluctant as anybody is, this is not what I had on my agenda of things to do. I really was going to do a million other things. Too bad. This is what you're facing right now. Okay. The next unexpected event that is a big one for people is the death of a parent. This tragic event triggers a dismantling of your parents' whole life and house and all their belongings. It's a big, big project. And you may have to suddenly settle the living spouse in a new living situation. You may have to start taking care of your parents' pets all of a sudden. If your parents own their house outright, then you have a little bit more time and leeway to deal with it. But if the house has a mortgage or there's a rent payment instead, you may have a much shorter time frame to cope with it, depending on what kind of family resources you have. I mean, it's not like somebody's standing around with a bunch of extra money ready to take over, you know, a rent payment or a mortgage payment if somebody passes away. And so depending on your circumstances, you may have a much tighter time frame to deal with this. And the problem is that you're trying to deal with the death of a parent and their belongings, managing their belongings, when you are the most distressed possible in your life. It's the hardest time ever. And so you're not bringing a whole lot to the table anyway, because you are devastated. And so it's really something that anything that you can do in advance of this situation only helps you and the surviving parent. It helps you and your siblings cope if you can deal with it before the event has happened. And so you can start out by talking with your parents about it and talking to them about, how can I help you make plans around this? How can I help you let go of your stuff now? How can I help you make plans about where you want to move if you are going to be, when one spouse dies, the other one wants to move, or if a couple wants to downsize and move now while they can? You know, anything that they're willing to talk to you about and anything they're willing to do in advance would be helpful. If they are willing to start going through stuff and letting go of stuff, giving you instructions, here's what I want you to do with the pets, here's what I want you to do with the grandmother's jewelry, you know, whatever they can do to tell you in advance now, and whatever plans they're willing to make with you would be awesome and super helpful for you later when, you know, the future you, when you are super devastated, will be glad that the non-upset version of you was working on this already. I had a YouTube audience member write me a comment and say what to do when her parents wouldn't talk to her about it at all. Like, they refused to acknowledge the inevitable. Like, they were not willing to engage in any conversation that talked about what to do when one of us dies, what to do with the stuff, where's it supposed to go, where's our important paperwork. They wouldn't broach the subject at all. And so she's like, what can I do? What can I do? And my advice was, you can start research about service providers to support you when that happens in the future. So I told her, go find organizers in the area, go find the cleaning service that you want to hire, go find the moving company that you want to work with, go find the local charities and the local pet rescues that are around where your parents are. This is the time to do the research while you can do it in a peaceful way. Go tour a assisted living facility. You don't have to go with your parents. You can go and look at places around and get some idea about what's involved and what kind of money and what kind of process it takes to make that happen. You can do that work as a pre-planning event. Even though your parents aren't willing to participate, you can go do some of that research in advance. And if you do that, you will have a list of things, people to contact, things to do, places to go that you already feel like you've vetted and are comfortable with the solution. It takes some of that burden of 1,000 decisions off of your table if you can go and do that in advance. And so the best case scenario is that your parents are participating in that conversation, they're driving those choices, and they're doing that themselves, and you are supporting them and helping them. But the worst case scenario is they're like, la 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 la, nobody's dying, la la la, and then you have to be the one to say, okay, I don't want to face this completely unprepared and having thought about nothing. So I'm going to go do a bunch of research. And you don't have to tell your parent you're doing it. Just go and do what you need to do so that you have a list of things to go to, resources to tap when you are faced with a situation.
Gail, Jen commented, and where will they be buried or where do they want their ashes to go? What a stressor my family could have avoided when my dad passed.
If only he'd had the conversation for 10 minutes with you, right? Totally true. And, like I said, there are parents that they're just like, la, 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 I can't deal with it. But hopefully you can have that conversation and have it not in the big middle of a, family holiday with 25 people around when there's a whole big event going on. Like, you want to have these conversations when there's nothing else happening and it's super quiet and you can just have that conversation in a very casual, low stress environment, and hopefully they'll participate. And, my mother was very good about that. My sister and I benefited from her planning in great measure, because she had already picked out, paid for, this is where I want, here's the funeral home, here's the thing, I want to be buried on the church grounds, here's the PVC pipe that you want to stick my ashes in. They had a little columbarium out in the garden, and it was all paid for and handled. So there's a huge list of decisions that come, and how she helped in the house was that she started decluttering her house 10 years before. I mean, she had been through and gotten rid of a whole bunch of stuff by the time we had to empty her house. And that was super helpful to me and my sister. And so anything that they're willing to tell you in advance, and maybe they're not willing to have the whole conversation in one sit down, but you can keep going back and say, okay, answer this question today. Okay, answer that question today. Okay, go back every week and ask a new question and go write down the answer somewhere, because you're not going to remember 10 years from now what they said, but you can answer the question and start a little journal somewhere of the answers, and it'll save you a ton of trouble. Okay, so I also wanted to talk about death of the spouse, because I think it's a slightly different situation. The things that are triggered by the death of the spouse are completely different. As a surviving spouse, your whole life is suddenly going to change, because now you are not operating as part of a team and the house is not being run by a team. And so suddenly you're in charge of everything that have to do with your living space and everything you own, and managing your bills and getting the car repaired and what happens when the roof leaks and all that stuff. And if you are not the person that's been doing those chores, then you may find yourself suddenly in supreme horrible grief and having to pay the bills and not having done it for a while. And so this is one of those things that I think is worth the effort of trading chores. I remember my grandmother, who died at 89, and my grandfather, who died at 96 or something, she died before he did, and she had been doing his laundry for approximately 70 years, their entire marriage. And I don't think he'd ever washed anything that he'd ever put on his body ever. And so she was trying to teach him how to do the laundry before she died. It's like, okay, at 93, it was not like a great time to expect him to learn new things. You know what I'm saying? It was a little late to be training him. So I'm thinking that part of how you can anticipate this situation is that you guys trade chores back and forth so that you have some clue about who to call to get the car repaired, or who to call about the roof leak, or how you're going to get the bills paid, or where the passwords are for the accounts. You need to know that stuff and be familiar and have used them, you know, well in advance of 2 weeks before the person dies. Like, it's too late then to learn something new. So make the investment in learning each other's responsibilities and taking them over occasionally and doing them for a little while, so you have some familiarity with what's going on, so that you're not completely caught off guard. And then if it's really that there's no way that you can cope with paying the bills, or there's no way that you can cope with, I can't deal with the car repairs, then, you know, make an alternate plan about, okay, when I'm responsible for the car repairs, this is what I'm going to do. This is who I'm going to contact. This is how I'm going to solve this problem. And give yourself a little benefit of pre-planning and conversation with somebody about how you're going to cope when it's just you and not the current team that's been functioning for the last 50 years. Needless to say, my grandfather did not do a great job of doing his own laundry, and we had to hire that service out because, you know, he just was not capable. And so my grandma waited a little bit too late to realize that he did not know how to run a washing machine at all. So it's one of those things that when your spouse dies, the way that you've been living your life up to that point is completely blown apart, and you have to reinvent yourself. You will be reinventing how you do all sorts of things, and you'll be doing it in a horrible amount of grief, and you'll be frozen for a while and you won't be able to do a whole lot. And so it's a bad time to be trying to figure it out. And if there's some practical life management things that you can figure out before this takes place, you'll just be helping your future self cope with grief and move on with your life later. So there's my advice about that. The next one is natural disasters. So what if you lose the function of the house, or you lose the house itself? Lots of people here got decluttered by Hurricane Harvey when it went through, because there was unprecedented amounts of flooding all over the city, and people's belongings just sort of floated down the street into the stream, into the bayous, and went away. It's hurricane season again, and we're seeing all sorts of crazy weather patterns happening all over the country, and so all over the world, actually. And so it's in anticipation here of hurricane season, it'd be a good time to start flood-proofing your belongings. And what I mean by that is, you can't deal with it when the water is washing up through the front door, like, it's too late to manage the stuff and move it around at that point. So better that you move this stuff now. So I would go through and find all of your important docs. You want the legal docs, the health insurance, you want the house insurance information, all the marriage and divorce certificate, birth certificates, passports, all that kind of hoo-ha. You want all that stuff in a watertight container, and you want it put up somewhere where you can grab it and go in a hurry in case you have to run out of your house. Then you want to go and look for all of your important keepsakes, mementos, tchotchkes that are valuable and important to you, whatever you think is important in terms of memories and sentiment. You want to go pull those things and make sure that they are up on the second floor, like they store on the second floor permanently, or they're up in on the single floor, but they're up in a closet, up an upper shelf somewhere in a closet, so that it's going to take, you know, 10 feet, 8 feet before the water reaches them. I think that people grieve the loss of the furniture in the house and that kind of stuff, but the things that linger and make them the most sad are their, you know, my family photos are lost, my baby photos are lost, my kids' artwork is lost, my, you know, that's the stuff that they linger about and are the most sad about for longer periods of time after some kind of disaster like that. So take those things that you consider precious and make sure that they are up in the air and not a problem. Basically, they're not, they're unlikely to be gotten wet. Concentrate on the decluttering the lower cabinets and the floors of all the closets. You're just saving yourself a bunch of hassle if you go through and declutter everything that you don't like, take it out now, anything that you don't want that's in those lower cabinets or on the lower shelves or in the lower part of the closet, maybe hanging on the lower rung of the closet, right? Like 3 feet up, if you get your yardstick and go 3 feet up and see, you know, what, where is water touching, and then decide what of the stuff in that zone is something that you don't really care about anyway, and you can just get it out of there now, because better that you are carrying it out while it's dry and you're making a choice than you're having to drag it out waterlogged and smelly and nasty after it's been in a flood. So you can save your future self some hassle if you go through and declutter everything at flood level and make sure that it's only stuff that you really care about in there. And then, you know, when you know the water's coming, here's the storm and you got to move stuff around, then you're just grabbing things and then you have much less to put up higher and you have much less to sit on top of furniture or whatever you're going to try to do to keep it from floating away. The problem is that the water's really strong and lots of people put things on top of tables and then the table, the water lifted the table up and floated the table around. Everything that was on top of the boxes all fell into the water anyway. So it's always a, you know, an interesting situation to try to prep for a flood. But anything that's at flood level, if you can thin out the volume that's at flood level, you're just saving yourself some hassle later. Okay, that is a short list of unplanned events. And really all you can do is try to think through what you're going to have to do if something like that happens, if your parent dies, if your spouse dies, if your house floods, and do some preemptive strike action ahead of time. So let's talk about the planned ones next. The first and biggest planned event for most people is getting married, right? This is an event where you're moving two households into one. It's a wholesale movement of everybody into one. And we spend a whole lot of time, you spend a year planning this weekend of events, this big, big party, and most people don't spend any time planning the life that's going to happen afterwards. So it's a good time to focus on, not only are we having this seriously fun, expensive party that is going to be a total blowout and I'm going to do all this stuff to make it perfect and beautiful, but then perhaps we should also plan a little bit about how we're going to live our life going forward. And so either you're one of you is moving in with the other one or you're going to a new location together, but recognizing that in this moment it isn't just this everybody's going to take their full contents and shove them into the new location. There's not enough room for that, right? Like both of you don't have a half empty house where you're living. You both have full houses where you're living. And so trying to combine those two households into one is a guaranteed disaster, right? So you have to make that plan in advance to, you know, everybody has to get rid of 50% of their stuff or some combination thereof in order to get still have a full house worth going to a new location or for you to share a house if one's moving into the other. If the person who is moving in does not get to move in some of their stuff, they're not going to feel welcome or feel like they're, you know, being allowed to live in the new space. And so part of making your spouse feel welcome is making space for them and not just a little space. We're not talking about a little sliver in the closet. You know, like you have to get serious about, I don't get to have 100% of this space now. I have to surrender half of it to my spouse. And so having conversations about what furniture is going to go and where it's going to go and what kind, how many boxes of keepsakes are coming and whose sets of towels we're going to use and whose linens are we going to use, and what about the refrigerator, and you're going to have two of everything, and you're not going to want to move two of everything into wherever you're going to move. So take some time to have that conversation and plan that out in advance. It will be totally worth it. And, you know, prevent some arguments later. I'm just saying. The other planned event is a divorce. And this is where splitting your life apart has a physical counterpart to the emotional one of breaking up. It's a hard thing to do if everybody's talking and being reasonable. But if you guys are not talking or you're fighting and it's getting ugly between you, then it's just going to be that much harder. Now you have to separate everything while you're all mad and resentful and hurt. And it's not a great environment for making decisions. So this is the one place where picking your battles is super important. Is it really worth pitching a fit over something small? And try to pay attention to the fact that your feelings of anger and hurt are coloring your response to, do I really want this coffee table? So if you find yourself having this argument and pitched battle and you're screaming and yelling and crying about some coffee table, then you have to stop and ask yourself, okay, am I really screaming and crying about this coffee table? Or am I just really screaming and crying because I'm sad and angry? Like, they're not the same thing. So remember that great scene in Harry Met Sally when their friends are moving in together and there's a big wagon wheel coffee table and they're talking about it. And he says, you know, everything's all great and wonderful. Y'all are moving and everybody's happy. But someday you're going to go 15 rounds about this stupid wagon wheel coffee table. This is true. He was right. And it's not something that you want to make your divorce more miserable over. And so making a plan about separating your stuff when you get to divorce, trying to do that without being in a huge fight would be wonderful. And, you know, if you have to do it with lawyers and you've got, you know, big lists and everybody's going back and forth, just remember that you're pitching a big old fit about the, you know, the Waterford crystal vase and how much do you really, really care. If you're just digging in your heels because you're angry, then you're just making your separation that much more painful for everybody, right? So trying to make a plan for separating the stuff and still have it be an objective splitting of the stuff without sobbing over all of it would be in service to you both, I guess is what I'm saying. And you may not be able to do it all in one sitting and you may have to be, you know, negotiate with it over time, but just acknowledge that your emotions are going to make that separation of stuff not the practical task that it really is, but it's going to make it an emotion-laden, miserable one instead. And anything you can do to step back from that emotion and go, wait, that's not really what's happening. It's just a wagon wheel coffee table will be helpful. Okay. The next planned event is...
Sorry, Gail. Yes. Let me interrupt you.
Okay.
Noelle added, this is also the time to find out how all the bills work, what kinds of things are due when, house maintenance, etc.
Exactly, because you got the same thing happening, right? Somebody has been in charge of that stuff, and that person may be moving out, and so suddenly you don't know what to do, and then you end up going, "Oh no, there's a leak! Damn, I have to call my ex-husband or ex-wife to find out what the solution is." And like, you don't want to keep having those conversations either. So, you're right; it's a good time to, you know, find out what the chores are and find out what the solutions are and hopefully make up a new plan that doesn't involve consulting and calling your spouse and reigniting your arguments.
Before we get too far away from it too, Jen added, yes, on the subject of flooding, anything that is very important shouldn't be in the lowest drawer of the filing cabinet.
Right? Yes. Yeah, because, you know, if you walk around with your yardstick, you will make it very obvious what's happening. Like, just walk around with a yardstick and stand there and look at what is in 1 foot. And the lowest drawer of the file cabinet is 12 inches. So if you have 6 inches of water, that file cabinet's getting wet and everything in it, right? And so it is a, you know, it's a good plan to go and see what is on your lower level and how important that stuff is to you. And if you don't want it to float down the street or float through the house and then be thrown out into a big pile in the driveway, yeah, time to move it. Was there something else, Ed?
Yeah, Jen also mentioned that a coworker's wife moved all their documents and he didn't know about it. And so then she said it was a big deal in Harvey. I assume that means, you know, when they when he needed all that stuff, he didn't know where any of it was.
He didn't know where it was. Yes, yeah. Yes. You do need, everybody in the house needs to know where the important documents are, that's for sure, because if you aren't home and somebody's home and you have to call and say, hey, go get the important document file and I'll, you know, pick you up in the driveway or you know, somebody's coming to get you or whatever. If somebody has to run and they don't know where the documents are, you don't want them running all around the house trying to figure out where they are. The next planned event is the birth of a child. And suddenly all of the ways that you live and all the things that you own are going to change 100%. And the perfect metaphor for this is you are changing your life from a sports car life to a minivan life, right? And of course, this is all of the stuff, you know, there's mothers that say to me all the time, I was so organized when I lived alone or when we first got married. Well, of course you were, because it was two adults in charge of their stuff. And a child only adds stuff with half the skills. They don't have any capacity to manage themselves. They can't manage their own stuff. They are, you know, little bundles of content and mess and struggle. And, you know, they can't eat without wearing it all. And so... This is a time in your life when everything is going to change and a whole bunch of stuff is going to be added that you are now in charge of managing, because the little kid is going to be is many, many years away from being able to manage their own stuff. And so in the beginning, all of your contents of your house is going to like be topsy-turvy, and then the little kid is going to be in the middle of it, call it wreaking havoc, right? So this is this is one of those things where they really bring nothing to the table but cuteness, and I wrote exceptional destructive capabilities. They're just going to be in destruction mode all the time, and you're going to be running around trying to keep up with them. So in service to that, decluttering your house before the baby comes will help you, because after the baby comes, you know, there's just going to be a fire hose of stuff, new stuff coming into your house to manage the baby, and the grandparents are going to be sending gifts and all. Yeah, you're going to be constantly adding to the pile. So anything you can do in advance to declutter the house before the baby comes will help. And, you know, creating a maintenance process of churning through the baby stuff as fast as it outgrew that. It can't fit in that seat anymore. It can't sit in there. You know, the baby grows quickly and outreaches lots of the things that they have in the beginning. So it starts this cycle of constantly growing out of things. And if you can create a maintenance process where you know, pass those things on as fast as possible, that would be wonderful. Graduation is another planned event that everybody is has to respond to. Usually graduation means that you are changing your life. You're going to get a new job. You're going to maybe move to a new city. You might move to a new location because you suddenly have an income stream after being in school. And so whether you do that in your 40s or your 20s, those changes, those radical changes happen either way. And it's a perfect time for you to separate yourself from all of your childhood stuff. You have no idea how many houses I've gone into where this room used to be Tommy's room, and Tommy still has a bunch of stuff in the closet or in the room because Tommy didn't want to take it to college. And then Tommy's never been back again. He graduated and went on with his life. And now the parents are like, I don't know what to do with this stuff because it's not mine. And so I don't feel like I can make decisions about what Tommy cares about. But the truth is, half of it's junk that Tommy's forgotten about. So you can save yourself a lot of trouble if you are willing to acknowledge that graduation is a big leap in your life and you don't really want all these childhood things anymore. You're moving on to grown-up things and things that you're going to buy with your new grown-up money, your new grown-up job, and keeping up with all of the karate trophies from when you were 10 is not important anymore. And so at the very least, if you can filter those things and say, Mom, it's okay to donate this stuff, and throwing out the trash and creating a very intentional box of mementos and keepsakes that you actually want to keep into adulthood would be super helpful to you in your future and to your parents who are terrified to touch your stuff because they think they're going to get in trouble. And so, and they probably would, right? Because they don't know what's important to you. So don't burden your parents with that stuff. Someday, if you ignore it, it will still be there when your parents die, and you'll be hauling that stuff out to the curb. You'll be having to go through it in your 50s when your parents pass away. So be nice to your future self, and you go through the graduation process and you're leaving the house, or you're moving into your new grown-up space, or you're moving into your upgraded grown-up space if you're doing it in your 40s. Go through that stuff. Don't bring everything with you from your childhood. Concentrate it down into the box of intentional keepsakes, and then let the rest go. Dispense of it now while you have the, you know, capacity, and your save your parents the hassle of moving those boxes around during a flood, for instance. So graduation is the perfect time to go, yes, I'm stepping into a new phase of my life, and I can filter through the old phase of my life and thin that down. It'll be worth the effort, I'm telling you, later in life. The last planned event on my list is a home renovation. Any remodeling requires a huge disruption of how the house is set up and how it functions. And you have to wash dishes in the bathtub, and you have to sleep in the guest room, and you have to, some part of the house will be taped off, and you have to like walk through plastic wrap in order to get from one room to the other. You may lose complete function of the kitchen if you renovate the kitchen, or you may not have a shower, or, you know, there's all sorts of, anybody that does any kind of remodeling, your whole process of living in the house and going about your daily life is going to completely change. And so don't start any reno without having a plan in place about what you want to do. The contractor is not going to worry about how you're going to, you know, bathe or wash your dishes while he's destroyed your kitchen. He's just going to come in and start destroying it. So people do a whole lot of planning about what the reno, you know, here's what I want the finished kitchen to look like, or here's what I want the new family room to look like, but they don't think about, gee, while this half of the house is taped off and I can't use any of it, how am I going to microwave the popcorn? It's, you need to think through, and before, 2 days before the contractor comes, or the night before the contractor comes, that is not enough time. So give yourself some advanced prep about how are we going to cope? Because depending on the reno, you could be out of that part of the house for months. It might be 4 weeks, but it might be 7 months or 10 months, depending on how busy your contractor is and how big the reno is and how much you tack onto the job and how much scope creep happens. You never know. So making a good plan about how you guys are going to survive and cope while you're working while you're working on this project would be super helpful. A plan, make a plan. That's what I'm saying. So thanks for thinking through this with me. The best advice I can give here is, whether these events are planned and, you know, fun, happy things that are happening, or unplanned, like somebody's died, I'm, you know, hurt, whatever, regardless of which one they are, you can still think in advance and do some research and make some plans so that when you're in the moment of supreme stress of whichever one of these things they are, you will have some thoughts about what to do already. And you can do it when you are less stressed and less freaked out, when it's calm and peaceful, and you can, in a very considered and thoughtful way, think about what to do so that when you're faced with the drama, you can cope. I knew, because I was really in a lot of pain, that my coping mechanism was to go to the urgent care. But I also knew that I had to mess with my schedule and contact my clients. And it was very, for me, it was very obvious the things that I had to take care of right away. And you can think through, oh my God, if my mom dies, what am I going to do with her cats? Right? And trying to do that in the moment is a lot harder than thinking about it and doing research in advance. And so I'm just telling you, think about it in advance. Okay.
Gail, Jen added, I love this whole topic. It's planning for the whole future story, not just one part, i.e. wedding party or the new fridge.
Right.
And Noelle added another circumstance. We have had way too many emergency room visits, and now we have an emergency room checklist for the non-sick person to pack real quick. Phones, phone chargers, snacks, water, magazine, etc.
Oh, Noelle, I'm so sorry that that's, I'm sorry that you're such an expert at coping with emergency room visits. That's terrible. But how great that you created a coping mechanism for it. I really like that. So she made a plan. Here's the checklist of things that we have to take when we run to the ER. That's awesome. That is really great. I love that. Good on you.
And Sheila added, thanks a lot, Gail. My husband and I have been putting off him learning bills, final arrangement planning, and possibly planning for a move from Maryland to Texas. This has been inspiring to get on those chores. P.S. Glad you're feeling better.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And yes, you should get on those chores, because if you're contemplating moving from another state, like, that's a lot of transition. So better do it now while everybody has the capacity and the energy and the health to deal with it. Because when somebody goes off the cliff, it's too late. So now's the time to do it. And you know, the more time that you have to put into it, the more comfortable you get with the plan, and the more detailed and research, the better your choices are. And so working on it now, and you know, make a list of all the things that you might want to deal with, and you can just chip away at them a little bit, just like any organizing project, right? You make a list and you chip away at it a little bit over time. And I would start with him learning the bills, because I'm guessing that he's going to need practice with that, right? When my stepmother had an accident and she was in the hospital unconscious, and my dad was like, oh yeah, she pays all the bills and all of the passwords are in some spreadsheet on her computer, and I don't know how to get to it, and I don't know where that is. And like, he didn't know, like, gee, how are we going to pay the mortgage and the light bill? Because I don't know any of the online account logins, and I don't know how to get to it. So they worked it out eventually, but there was a few weeks there where he was kind of panicking about, gee, I don't know what's about to be past due. So looping somebody in about how to deal with that would be super helpful. And looping one of your children or helpful younger friend in would also be helpful. Like, you don't have to give away the farm and the data. We've talked about this before. You don't have to give somebody all the information until they need it, but you know, you can give them a way to get the information if they do suddenly need it. Give it to the lawyer, put it in the lockbox, whatever. So that if somebody needs to step in and take over your life, they can do it. And you can accomplish that with a little bit of advanced planning. So good on you to get going.
Lori chimed in and said, agree on the moving planning. We are looking at option to move back to Canada from Texas. So many things to consider.
Yes, and that's a long move too. So my advice for your moving is, don't take a thing that you don't think you need, because there is no reason to pay to move stuff that you're going to give away to Goodwill on the other end. So make sure that you do a whole lot. You're very, very thorough with your decluttering before the move happens. And that way you are packing the, you know, essentials, the really important stuff, and moving it forward. Don't worry about the furniture. If you don't know exactly where you're going to be, you can get rid of a few pieces of furniture on the other end. But I'm talking about the volumes and volumes of little stuff that lives in your life. Don't take it if you don't need it. All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining me for the chat today. I appreciate it so much.
Before we go, we want to let everyone know about our upcoming events. Our
Thank
next
you.
Meeting will be on Thursday, July 25th at 7 p.m. We'll meet in person at a Healing Collective in Houston. Then we'll meet online again on Tuesday, August 27th at 12:01 Central Time. YouTube viewers, we'd love for you to join us. You can visit our website to RSVP, or for more information, we'll announce topics for both of those events soon. If you'd like to receive notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group at meetup.com/Houston-clutter-coaching. You can also follow us on Facebook or subscribe to our mailing list. We love to hear from you, so please send us your questions and topic suggestions in the YouTube comments. And you can always reach us through our website at clutterfairyhouston.com.
Yay, thank you. I do love to hear from you guys, so I really appreciate when you take the time to make comments and you come and chat during our conversation. I get a big kick out of interacting with people and talking about this stuff. So anytime you want to send me a message, I'd be happy to hear it. All right, I'll see you guys soon. Thank you. Bye.